VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. Adam's home and here. And this is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
You probably didn't even miss him because he was here last week, too.
Well, actually, sometimes I do my best work when I'm on vacation.
This week, I would have to give you a big attaboy. It was not bad. Well, here we are again, as usual, live TPC week, and of course, I always admonish the listeners at this point, whether you're from in town, out of town, whether you're regular or first time, hey, thanks for being here, but also there's a lot of people around, and they come from a lot of different places, and a lot of them don't know exactly where they're going, and it would be just nice if all of the locals can have a little bit of patience and let them be, so to speak. And just try to avoid trying to test the Newtonian laws of physics that said two objects cannot occupy the same space at the same time, and that includes automobiles. So leave a little space and have a little patience. Everybody will get there and have a good time. Weatherman has been surprisingly good. We knew Thursday and Friday would be fabulous.
When they moved this tournament back, I was a little bit wary because March can go either way.
It's a coin toss, not just year by year, but day by day, it's a coin toss as to how it's going to be. Well, I was out there for a little while on Thursday in the afternoon, and it was about 74 with a mild breeze, and it just doesn't get any better than that. So we scored big time. Adam said he's going out tomorrow for a while, so we're all having a good time. Love having it back in March, actually, for several reasons. For one, it's not quite so hot. So, like I said, be careful out there and let everybody come in and have a good time. Remember what it was like so they'll come back next year and keep spending their money locally. We love it. All right. Gosh, another week in the market and another smile on my face. It's been an interesting year, but for a couple of things, it would have been an unbelievable year, but we don't really care for unbelievable very much. I'd rather have it somewhat explainable. So without getting into too much detail myself, I'm just going to turn it over and let Adam tell you what went on this week and what we expect.
Yeah, it was a really nice rally. But there was one thing that was pretty noticeable, that one of these things was not like the other, I guess I'll say. The Dow was really dragged down, and most of it was Boeing stock, which dropped more than 10% after their 737 MAX got grounded pretty much worldwide after the second crash in about 6 months. It was a pretty major drag on the Dow, but it managed to overcome that downward pressure and rise 1.6% this week. That would have been a good week, but the broader market really outperformed that. The S&P rose 2.9% and the NASDAQ rose 3.8%. So really a nice week in the market with that one little asterisk on the Dow. Month to date, the Dow is actually slightly negative at 0.3% down, while the S&P is up 1.4 and the NASDAQ is up 2.1. All three are up double digits for the year 2019, though, with the NASDAQ leading the way up 15.9%. Since Christmas Eve, the NASDAQ has rebounded almost 20%, 19.5%. Pretty incredible.
It is indeed. And remember the gloom and doom that was raging for the month right up to Christmas Day.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just remarkable what a comeback there's been.
Even fixed income got in on the rally this week. Pretty much gains across the board. Short treasuries were up by 8 basis points, while long treasuries were up by 15. The middle part of the curve did the best, though, gaining 33 basis points. TIPS saw a bit of a rally as well, gaining more than 0.5%. The good news was not limited to the domestic markets either. The international markets actually outperformed in many cases. India was up 5%, Brazil just under 5%, and China 4.5%. European markets, kind of under the radar, but they actually gained over 3% in many cases this week.
And yet, part of the bad news for the week was the Brexit vote went down in flames again.
Yep, that is true. You say bad news, but is it?
Well, that's what the public perception. Well, no, that's what the media tell you.
Yeah,
well, let's be honest.
That is public perception.
We all know better
when it comes to foreign events like that. I don't think a lot of people even know or care about Brexit that much.
No.
And so whatever they tell you is kind of shapes the narrative, and they've certainly been pretty negative about what happened this week. But the European markets don't really seem to care at all. The economic data this week brought me more confusion. If you remember the terrible retail sales report that came out last month for the month of December, it was kind of a joke. Company after company reported sales in December, record sales, best December ever. The Christmas shopping season was a huge success.
But the whole was not equal to the sum of the parts, according to the powers that be.
The retail sales report didn't show that. It was, first of all, it was delayed due to the government shutdown. And then when it did come out, it said that sales basically came to a halt in December. It just doesn't add up. This week, we saw the report for January, which showed increases pretty much across the board. But that report doubled down on the December report and lowered the already abysmal numbers that we saw in December.
I said a week or two ago, don't trust any economic numbers before April this year.
It's crazy. What does it mean? My there guess is that it just means that the government is incompetent, which we already pretty much know.
Yeah. There's a red-hot news flash.
Yeah. So according to the government, online sales slowed by 5% in December of this year.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
For the Christmas season, online sales. Mm-hmm. Amazon said it was their best holiday season ever. The
Walmart's
single biggest online realtor.
Online.
Walmart. Target's doing pretty well.
Yep.
It's unbelievable. I don't think anyone is actually paying attention to this. That according to the government, the same report now says that that last year online sales grew 2%. It's just not possible. This is years and years of double-digit growth, and then all of a sudden in 2019, probably the best year ever for online sales, it grew by 2%.
Marvin Gaye moment.
No way.
Believe half of what you see and none of what you hear.
It's just, I can't believe someone signed off on this report. It just doesn't make any sense. And it's not me trying to be optimistic. It just, 2% last year? Really?
Well, conspiracy theory answer? It's the deep state.
Well, you know, when it first came out, I could believe that. But then to revise it down, that doesn't help anyone's cause. So just crazy.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Exactly. So another area that took a pretty big dive last month was small business optimism. And this month we saw a small rebound, which is nice. But the trends in the report are pretty clear. It's getting really hard to find and keep good employees. And that is actually great news for anyone who wants to work, because it probably means that more pay raises are coming.
Were you jolted by the JOLTS number?
No. Were you?
Well, no. I was disappointed because people aren't coming out of the woodwork fast enough to get jobs when they're readily available.
Well, and that's mirrored in the small business report, saying that they
What's
just
the biggest
can't
problem
find good
now?
People.
Yeah, number one and number two, quality of labor and cost of labor.
Mm-hmm.
That means wages are going up. They're going up twice as much in the blue-collar jobs as in the white-collar jobs. It is the best time I've ever seen to get a job.
Yeah, and if we can't fill those jobs, you know what the best way to do that is? Quality immigration, legal immigration through H-1B visas.
That's exactly right. There is no substitute for there's no excuse for an economy like this not having enough people to do the work that's available.
Exactly.
And it's hurting everybody in the long run. But we got to get a fire lit under some of these people. All right, lots more when we come back. We got to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have a trivia question brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888. Most of you have heard about the problems that Boeing's been having for the last few days with the 737s being grounded. And it was, of course, very difficult for them with their stock, because investors don't like that uncertainty that's brought to bear on the company. And yet they've fared pretty well this year. In fact, they've had a significant positive influence on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. In fact, they're responsible for more point increases on the Dow than any other company around, even after everything that's gone wrong. So my question is, what percentage of this year's increase on the Dow has been attributable directly to Boeing?
All right.
A whole number of percent. All right. From an investor standpoint, what do you see from what happened this week, the job market, the investing climate and all that?
I think that, well, one thing I didn't get to, but I did want to note, was that my favorite contrarian indicator moved in the right direction this week. So
I think I know what you mean.
Yeah, so bullish sentiment decreased.
Yeah, sharply.
And bearish sentiment increased despite the really nice rally we saw. And that is a really good setup for next week, in my opinion, because whenever that happens, in fact, since we started this show, I was thinking about it this morning. I don't think there's been a better predictor of market direction in the last 4 years than the market has gone up when bearish sentiment has gone up and gone down when bearish sentiment has gone down. Sorry.
Yeah, everything that reversed, should be. Yeah, no, that's an algorithm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. The public at large is not a really good predictor of what's going to happen in the market.
No, in fact, they're terrible.
Yeah.
It's pretty well proven.
You know, we always say that the market is brilliant. The people in the market overall, they're always 6 to 9 months ahead of what's happening now. Mm-hmm. And the collective brain is actually very, very sharp. What's not so sharp is the public looking to get in or get out right now in the short run.
Because they overthink it.
Exactly right. And they get scared. In fact, I've got a thing. I'll talk about this in a little bit. Is fear the ultimate financial sales tool? That's an article that I found this week. The answer to that is simply, it's effective.
Yeah.
But so? If you convince people to do something they shouldn't do, are you successful?
Yeah, but you can use it to convince people to do something they should do, too. Like,
you can.
People have a great fear of missing out, FOMO, and they are afraid that they're going to miss out if they're not in the market, which is actually where they should be. So it can be used in a good way as well.
It can be, but I'll get into more of that as the day goes on here. But think of the things that were happening this week. The college cheating scandal.
Jeez.
Huge news.
I don't think we
should. Not in any way, shape, or form positive.
No, I don't think we need to spend too much time on it, but just wow.
Yeah.
I mean,
North Korea perhaps not living up to their promises thus far. We don't know for sure yet, but it's not looking good. A mass shooting in New Zealand. Boeing jets being hurt badly. And one of the biggies, the Brexit vote failed. Now, all of that, you could add up. And it might indicate to a thinking person that, wow, that probably wouldn't cause a very good week in the markets, would it? And yet, none of it mattered.
Two other things. The economic data wasn't overwhelmingly good.
No,
and
it wasn't overwhelmingly bad either, especially if you read the details closely.
But at the same time, that gives the Fed's dovish policy more fire, which means that there's probably less chance of a rate hike this year than there was last week.
The market is factoring in a 60% chance of no rate hikes yet this year.
I still think that's too high.
I am going to disagree with you.
Okay.
I'm going to say there's a 60% chance. I agree with the market this time.
Okay.
We'll see. I think he got scared.
I think there's a hike later this year.
We'll see, won't we?
Okay.
I'll tell you on January 1st.
Well, one of us is going to be right. There's either going to be a hike
exactly
or there won't.
Right. I saw him meeting Jerry Powell, the Fed chairman. So I'm interviewed on 60 Minutes or something like that. And I had not listened to an in-depth interview with him before. And I have to say, the man comes across really well.
I'm pretty sure I saw that before you and told you that, and you didn't believe me.
That's very likely.
Yeah. No, he really does. He's actually quite entertaining for it. Economist.
And I didn't hear any policy wonky things, and I didn't hear any politically slanted things.
No, he was actually cracking jokes, and he was very
like
candid.
A regular guy.
Yeah, I agree.
A regular smart guy, though.
Mm-hmm.
So all in all, as much as I dislike the Fed and wish we'd get rid of it, if you're going to have one, he seems like a pretty comforting guy to head it up. So we'll see, won't we?
Yeah, I agree with that assessment.
So do we keep going up? Going to set new highs?
I think so.
I do, too. I predicted it the last couple of weeks that it's going to happen before we get the bear market indicators. I think we're going to hit new highs and extend this bull market officially. It still won't be the longest one. You'll hear that it's the longest one in history, but it's not. Longest one is way, way longer. We'd have to go years yet. But this one is way into second place already, and it just keeps going further, I believe. So, that it for the marketing wrap?
That's all I got.
All right. Well, me too. Just things are good. Don't listen to all the crap. That's the basics. All right. Is fear the ultimate sales tool? And this was written in response. Oh, by the way, I'm going to give the attribute on this one. The article was written by a fellow named Roger Wallner. I always get that wrong. Roger Wallner. He calls himself the Chicago Financial Planner. When he speaks, it's like looking in a mirror and listening to me. He and I agree on almost everything. I don't know. I think that makes me really smart because I really think he's smart. Might be the other way around.
Debatable.
Well, maybe we're trained the same way, whatever. But he wrote a very interesting little thing based on one of the websites that I quote you all a lot called Be Your Own Banker. This is one of those sites that sells fear and fully funded life insurance policies. And if there's one thing that'll make somebody buy a fully funded life insurance policy, then there's only one thing, and that one thing is fear. You're not going to buy one for the life insurance protection. You're going to buy it because somebody's promised you a lifetime of tax-free income. And folks, it doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. So now, Ameriprise has been running a commercial asking folks if they would outlive their money in retirement. And a lot of them, of course, think, well, I wouldn't like to because it's been shown for decades now that there's two things people fear more than death. One is public speaking, and you can get better at that with practice. Believe me, I know. And the other one is running out of money, and you can't get over that one.
No.
Nobody can get over the concept of running out of money. But does that make it right to sell fear in order to get people to cash in their chips and put it into a fully funded life insurance product?
No.
No, it does not.
No, but it happens all the time.
Now, does what I just said mean that you should never buy a life insurance product or an annuity?
No, there are definitely times and places for both of those products.
But what comes before the purchase of insurance or annuities?
Pretty much everything else.
Financial planning.
Yeah. I mean, you should be maxing out your 401k before that. You should have an emergency fund. You should be saving for your kids' college. And those things really come in. Annuities to solve an income problem, and life insurance products to do what they do, which is
protect.
A term life, is to protect. But then if you run out of every other savings vehicle out there and need another way to grow your money tax deferred, that is when I can see a time and a place for insurance products.
As our friend Stan, the annuity man, always points out, annuities are not investments. They are transfer of risk products.
Correct.
You buy an annuity for the simple reason that there is nothing else that'll do what an annuity does. So if you need a lifetime income of some level and you're going to have some Social Security that satisfies parts of it, maybe you got a little pension that satisfies it, but if the number is bigger than your other sources, the way you fill it in is you reverse engineer your income to see how big an annuity you should get. That money gets invested that way, but your real investment money then goes to people like us in a portfolio that will outpace inflation. It's one of the major problems with insurance products and annuities is the inflation-adjusted return. Annuities will promise you 2 or 3%. A lot of times savings accounts will get back up there someday. But there is not a real source of of keeping ahead of inflation when you're investing in insurance products, bank accounts, short-term money markets, and that sort of thing. What does that is the market, the equity markets and the bond markets, especially when used together over time, will long-term will provide you with returns in excess of inflation. You have to be involved. The people who sell these products have a little ploy that they do, and oh, and you see it in things like the full-page ads for the living trusts, that kind of your free living trust seminar. What they're trying to do is find out exactly how much money you've got. And then when they get a number on that, then guess what size annuity would be just perfect for you? It would be that number. You should put all of your money into, whenever anybody comes at you with the you should put all in there, turn around and run. Don't walk, run. They're not going to be working in your best interest. All right, lots more to come after the break. We'll see you in a few minutes. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this is Captain Dave.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine.
Yeah.
You were talking about annuities and fully funded life insurances. You know, they're really making a push again on the viaticals. I keep hearing it on the radio stations. Part, sell part of it, sell all of it.
Yeah,
you know, now we can live our retirement in happiness because we sold our policy.
I sold my term policy for $1.29.
They've been around for so long. You know, I worked with a company that was selling that product for a while.
Yeah, they took off during the crisis when AIDS was a big deal that we had not figured out how to control.
And they got killed, a couple of the big ones.
Because of medical science. Yep.
Yeah, because, you know, their actuarial tables on the chance of survival after X number of years turned out to be really wrong.
We might nowadays take a look at that and say maybe they should be looking at fentanyl for those big ones.
Yep. Well, anyway, I just thought I'd give you a call. It's out there again, and I mean, I hear it. There's
for anybody
one outfit that advertises on the radio.
Yeah, for anybody who doesn't know, because they won't use that term anymore. It's been sullied for too many decades. But what a viatical was, they find somebody who's sick and needs money, and they buy their life insurance policy from them and give them cash for it, knowing that the guy, especially in the old AIDS day, had a life expectancy that you could count in weeks probably, and then they cash in. Now, was it a shyster move?
I don't think so.
I wouldn't call it a shyster. I'd call it a distasteful way to do things.
I mean, perhaps. It really serves a great purpose if that person needed money for medical expenses and didn't have any. I think it's a great product, but it was another one of those things that got sold inappropriately.
Yeah, Dave, have you heard the new ads that are just out again? They come around like things on the internet. They come around periodically about the fixed return lien release business. Lien business, I mean?
Boy, I'll tell you what, if people only knew that those liens are wonderful things if the person winds up paying their taxes, but if it winds on the courthouse step, you lose.
Yeah, and not only that, but you get to watch yourself try to kick somebody out of their house when they're at the lowest ebb in their entire lives.
Right.
It just takes a heck of a person to do that.
And those taxes are actually behind first position, aren't they?
Yeah, well, yes, absolutely, they are. And if there's anything left on it, that's what they teach in these seminars, how to evaluate, want to make sure there's enough spread in there that you'll get something.
I think that's bad karma.
Yeah, that's, you know, I love the way you put that. I think that's excellent.
I mean, yeah, there's better ways to make money than you got to look at yourself in the mirror and say, I'm a ghoul.
Yep. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I appreciate
it. Guys.
You'd be good
have
out there.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, that's a good point. Bad karma.
Yeah.
That
sure.
I feel that same way. Even though you're right from a technical standpoint, when you need money and you're dying and you want to get out of it, yeah, fine, do it. But they're just... I guess it's the way they're sold. It's so pushy and awful. But I think they're very misleading in the current ones. The new ones, well, you can even sell a term policy. And now we'll just add to our retirement. Some of my friends sold them and paid their medical bills.
Right. No, that's...
Come on.
No.
really. Well, we could complain about that all day, and I might. You never know. Journal of Financial Planning this past week comes out with a bunch of statistics, and normally that kind of thing doesn't require too much of my time to think about or talk about, but I found these so interesting. I thought I'd bring up a few and see if you see any reason that any of these would be you, because they involve relationship with the financial services industry in which we practice. So this is in the March issue of the Journal of Financial Planning, which is the vanguard of the financial advisory magazines that are published. And in fact, the Financial Planning Association, of which Adam is an officer, puts this out of the local chapter.
Local chapter, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we think that any good practitioner of financial planning services such as us should be a member, and we have been for years. First one, 65% of people surveyed say they mistrust the financial service industry. Adam and I have had an ongoing conversation for many years wondering if the bad apples in our business are either our best friends because they make us look good, or are they our worst enemies because they taint the public opinion of people who do what we do. The jury's still out on that one. I do not have a definitive answer.
You know, I lean more towards best friends. The more time goes on, you know, I lean more towards
best friends.
Our practice
seems that way.
Yeah. Because I think that intelligent consumers can go on the internet now and discover the different types of people that herald themselves as financial planners.
It's funny you should bring that up.
So,
because we go there here. A whopping 2% of people say that they trust financial advisors, quote, a lot. 2%. Now, what does that make you think about the bad apples out there? Not real sure. Next one. Higher than that is the group of people who trust advisors, quote, a little. And that is a whopping 15% of the public.
I agree with the public on this one. I would probably mark distrust somewhat on that survey.
I think I might, too, because we've been exposed to so much of it. I got a couple of those stories in here, too, that'll back this up. Next, 48% of people say that they don't work with a financial advisor because they see them as not trustworthy. At which side of that argument does that make you want to come down on? Our best friends or worst enemies? Now, if you read that in reverse, 52% are not in that group.
Right.
I mean, I think this discussion is going to go on for years. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a definitive answer to this. But anyway, here are some of the rules from us to you. If you're working with somebody and you've got question marks when you come home or even before you go in and see that somebody, think about some of these. Are you ever asked to write a check to your advisor with your advisor's name on it? Never do that. I give you one word that is absolute proof of my correctness on this issue. That word is Madoff. You didn't write checks to Fidelity or Charles Schwab Company. You wrote checks to Madoff, and it made off.
With your money.
Yeah. Can you see your funds at an independent, well-known public website of an independent custodian? That would be the Schwabs and the TDAs and the Fidelities and so on. Because if you can't log on to your account online from something that is totally detached from your advisor and see exactly how much you got, where it is, and what it's doing, then you are in a position where you should again turn your back and run. Is your advisor straight with you when you ask how he or she gets paid? Oh, yeah, I don't do commission work anymore. We have a wrap fee. Guess what a wrap fee is, people? It's a bunch of commissions wrapped up for a presentation to you so that they don't have to use the term commission. Same question here. Similar question. Same answer. How about, do you get a straight answer when you ask your advisor, are you a fiduciary? There are only two answers to that. yes and no. Anything in between is a no. The only yes is a yes. And if they're not, then you ought to really think the relationship that you have with your advisor. Next question. Did you meet this person at church or Rotary or other captive venue? This does not disqualify someone for working for you or with you, but it is a big red flag and you better start checking credentials. Next, is your advisor's business a brokerage or a registered investment advisor? If not, you're probably in a non-fiduciary relationship. Check it out. Are there commissions involved? Well, they won't always tell you. But if there's product sales, you can always tell a product sale because it's something like, well, we'll give you a lifetime income or a return for no risk or any of those things. Those are products. Is your advisor fee-only, fee-based, or commission? There's only one right answer, fee-only. Fee-based is not fee-only. Does your advisor sell annuities or insurance? Check for letters like that after their name. I'll wrap this up right after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this on the line is Chuck. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's up?
Hey, I want to ask you about that Bull and Bear survey that you all subscribe to. Is that something I can subscribe to, or is it, you know, what is it like?
Oh, so there's a research service that we use that includes that in as a piece of data in their weekly report, and anyone can buy it, but it is very expensive.
Yeah, I'm trying to think where a good source of free information like that would be. Do they have a free part of their site?
They do, but I don't believe it includes that.
Can you call next week?
We'll do some research for you.
Yeah, we'll look it up and see if they've got... These guys are the best.
Is it the same as the AAII?
No, it's not the Association of Independent Investors. These guys are a private outfit out of New York, and we have looked over the entire universe of researchers, and these guys are the best at what they do. I'm absolutely convinced. If they've got a free part that handles some of this, good. Otherwise, We'll look up AAII too and see what they offer and see what it's like. But no, basically, you know, we pay for this because it's worth it. That's all. So we'll let you know. Talk to you next week for sure. All right.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. Thanks. I appreciate the call. All right. Let's wrap this puppy up. 21% of people understand the difference between an advisor who is a fiduciary and one who is not. That tells me that this industry has not done a good enough job to convince people that that's really important. 93% of people believe that a financial advisor should be legally required to place the client's interests ahead of their own. Well, guess what that is?
Mm-hmm.
That's the definition of a fiduciary. So we have a disconnect here. 21% of people know the difference, but 93% actually want a fiduciary.
Mm-hmm.
So ask if you're dealing with somebody. Now, add an insult to injury, 53% of people mistakenly believe that all financial advisors are legally required to put the best interests of the client ahead of their own. This is not true.
I wish that were the case, and it looked like we were headed that direction for a while, and then
yeah,
it got
until the
derailed.
Republicans got it derailed.
Yeah.
50% of investors who work with an advisor know for certain if their advisor is a fiduciary. The rest of you just ask. 45% of people who don't work with a financial advisor say they don't because they believe that advisors are not trustworthy. Bad for us industry.
Yeah.
All right. If you want to, well, you guys, most of you out there will have heard this, the Certified Financial Planner Board, they're running commercials like crazy, and I really like them. I think they're very accurate and good for the public. If you want to find somebody, their site, which Adam and I agree isn't a very good one. It's called letsmakeaplan.org. And then you can hunt for people within your geographic area by range and miles. And what you'll find in any zip code around here, I did them all, you'll find us in some of them. If you expand your search, you'll find us in more of them. But as you go down the list of people that are recommended or at least on there, you'll see most of them, it says, how are they paid? And most of them are commission or commission and fee. If it's got the word commission in there, you know you're not dealing with a true fiduciary advisor. So go down till you find one that says fee only, and chances are it could be a face that looks like Adam or me on there.
Yeah. By going to that website, you are guaranteeing that you're going to get a certified financial planner, which is step one. So that's a good thing. But yeah, what you really want is a fee-only financial planner. So there's another website that you can go to, and it's called NAPFA Find an Advisor, and that will actually give you fee-only CFPs.
NAPFA, National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, a fee-only group to which we also belong. The last little tidbit out of here has very little to do with any of the other stuff, but 28% of the people surveyed said that their personal definition of wealth is living stress-free with peace of mind. What do the other 72 think? Yeah. To me, that's a definition.
No doubt.
Financial independence, isn't it, people?
All right. I think it's time for the AOC moment of the week.
Yay.
Yeah. So our favorite freshman congresswoman from New York, who just is a gift that keeps on giving. I had to actually narrow it down because there were so many things to choose from this week.
But she was prolific this week.
My favorite, she's prolific every week.
That's true.
My favorite moment of this week was when she decided that. So actually, I want to do a little bit of background. For a long time, Democrats have been threatening to hold manufacturers liable for whatever happens with their products. So if a consumer buys a product and then uses it in a bad way, they want to hold manufacturers responsible for that. And mainly this is targeted towards gun manufacturers. She has taken it to a whole other level, and she wants to not just go after the company that made the product, but the financial institution that lent them the money that enabled them to make the product. So she asked one of the CEO of Wells Fargo, what would happen if they lent money to build the Dakota Access Pipeline and then there was an oil spill? Shouldn't they be held responsible for the oil spill?
Did you see his response?
Yes. It was excellent.
I don't understand that question. What? It's nonsense.
No, we don't move oil through pipelines. That's not what we lent the money. But she thinks that they should be held responsible for an environmental problem that someone they lent money to caused.
Parallel story to that, a judge allowed a lawsuit to go forward against Remington for making the gun that was used in the Sandy Hook shootings.
So think about this, people. What kills more people every year than homicide-related gun deaths?
Automobiles.
So that means that if you open up this Pandora's box, that now Toyota will be responsible for every car death that happens in their car. What do you think would happen if that happens? Well, A, no one's going to make any more cars. No one's going to make any more guns. No one's going to lend money to make any of those things. And economic activity is going to be very hard to generate.
That's the Green Manifesto.
Maybe that's it. We're going to all return to
you just uncovered
living
the real
from
truth.
The earth. Yeah,
I'll be darned. Well, you never know. She is the gift, no doubt about it.
Wow, it would never end. If any one of these things succeeds, it will be a disaster for the world.
That's the truth. So, how much do you really know about taxes? This is from USA Today. Yesterday, the national taxpayer advocate warned that errors on tax forms were up 200% compared with last year as a result of the new 1040.
Wait a second.
wasn't this done partly in the name of tax simplification?
And it really is simpler.
It really is. You make mistakes?
That's not right.
Right? Yeah, they say as Americans fill out their returns, there are several items Americans appear to be unclear about. Well, they're the same items as before. There's just less of them.
Yeah, and also it would have helped had they given us clearer direction before the end of the year.
True.
But
a lot of you have heard of Betterment, the online advising company. They did the survey, and they found that many people are not confident about their taxes this year under the new law. But here's the fun part. About a quarter of millennials and individuals belonging to Generation Z, meaning born roughly between the mid-90s to mid-2000s, said they were very confident in their knowledge of taxes. That compares with 21% of Gen X and 14% of baby boomers. So as you get older, you seem to acquire a little more confidence. Overall, 85% of people felt somewhat confident. But those overly confident young Americans might just not know as much as they think. Nearly 40% did not know the filing deadline for the tax season. Let's see, folks. I'm pretty confident in my knowledge in taxes. What day is that due? If you don't know the answer April 15th, then you don't know anything about taxes.
That is, I'm sorry, millennials, but I'm in Gen X, and that just sums you guys up perfectly.
Half of taxpayers did not know how much money was being withheld from their paychecks. Well, you don't know anything about taxes, folks.
No.
Where do you get this artificial confidence? I don't know, but I'll tell you one thing it tells me.
Oh, I know where it came from. Participation trophies.
Yeah. Well, it tells me that Republicans can't sell even a good idea to the public. They just don't know how.
It's true.
It is absolutely true.
And it's sad.
13% of the rise in the Dow this year is attributable to Boeing, despite having what might be called the worst 10 days in the history of a lot of companies.
Mm-hmm.
But as Adam said, they gained about a point and a half back on Friday. So I think the market's factoring in the fact that it's a great company. They'll get it fixed and all will be well. It might just take a little doing. All right, be careful out there, folks. Have a great TPC weekend. Drive carefully. We will see you next week. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.